540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. A new plea just entered in the classified documents case. Correspondent Scott McFarlane has our top story.
Standing just feet away from the chief magistrate judge in the federal court in Miami, Walt Nauta has pleaded not guilty to the nearly three dozen federal charges he's facing, along with his boss and his co-defendant, the former president, Donald Trump.
Nauta is accused of complying with Mr. Trump's alleged order to move boxes containing top secret government materials at Mar-a-Lago, then helping him hide them from federal officials who demanded them back. Nauta's arraignment was delayed twice, once because he couldn't find a local lawyer, and again when his flight to Florida was delayed. Meta stock is up after the company launched Threads to rival Twitter's Instagram app today. CNET's Bridget Carey.
With all the changes that have happened to Twitter right now, it's not as useful as it was before. Far from it. It's basically trash.
Meta's Mark Zuckerberg says more than 30 million people have already signed up. The planet's average temperature remains at an unofficial record high set Tuesday. Odyssey meteorologist Craig Allen.
This, sadly, will contribute to a huge ice melt, a spike in ice melt down across the Antarctic region. We've already seen it across the Arctic, up across the North Pole, and now it seems to be taking place in a dramatic fashion down to the south.
Climate scientists blame humans for burning fossil fuels like coal, natural gas, and oil. They say El Nino is also warming oceans. Two firefighters have been killed fighting flames on a cargo ship docked at Port Newark. Mayor Ross Baraka.
It's a sad day for all of us in Newark. Our hearts are broken by the tragedy that we've experienced last night.
The Italian ship was carrying more than 1,200 cars, trucks, and vans when the fire broke out. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has arrived in China for a series of high-stakes meetings. Correspondent Elizabeth Palmer has details from Beijing.
They've said straight out, you're not going to see any policy breakthroughs from this, but everything is geared toward making sure that this is the beginning of talks and not the end, to try and put this fractious and very testy relationship back on a productive footing.
Good news for drivers. Gas buddies Patrick DeHaan tells CBS News he expects gas prices will be cheaper this year.
Between Halloween and Thanksgiving, that's usually when we see the lowest price for the season, that we could see the national average below the $3 a gallon mark.
According to AAA, national average for a gallon of regular today is $3.52, down from $4.77 a year ago. Dow down $4.58. This is CBS News.
Find great hires fast with Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring solution makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Find out what's going on in the world, the state,
and in your own backyard.
This is a Civic Media Network News Update.
It's 12:03. Good afternoon. I'm Terry Bell, and here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Conditions are getting better at the state's youth prisons in northern Wisconsin. A court-appointed monitor says the Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake schools are now in what's called substantial compliance with 32 requirements. Those requirements were put in place after a lawsuit in 2017 over conditions at the lockups for teenagers. The monitor says rooms are cleaner, safer, and better lit. The game rooms are better, and so is the food. They've also hired more staff, and they're better trained on how to use force when they have to. The state budget for the next 2 years is in place, but Wisconsin lawmakers and the governor have more work to do on taxing and spending. Pete Schwab has more.
Governor Evers says Wisconsin has enough money left over after his budget vetoes to take a second look at some of the state's priorities. In particular, he says the $15 million he put back into subsidized child care centers isn't nearly enough.
Well, no, absolutely not. I mean, that's a pittance. Our proposal in this budget, I think it was $300 million. That $15 million will not do it, not even close.
Republicans warn that property taxes will go up because of Evers' line item veto that lets school districts increase spending for inflation for the next 400 years. Representative Mark Bourne is co-chair of the Budget Writing Joint Finance Committee.
Who knows what it's going to look like 100, 200 years from now? This veto is just really a silly gimmick by this governor.
Bourne spoke with Channel 58 in Milwaukee. Evers says the University of Wisconsin system will come up with a plan to keep $32 million and diversity offices at the same time. Pichwaba, Civic Media News.
It might take a long time before we know exactly why a freight train jumped the tracks in Reeseville the other day. The state railroad commissioner says only a small number of people are trained to handle these types of investigations. Nobody got hurt when 29 train cars derailed on the afternoon of the 4th of July. The train wasn't carrying anything hazardous, but the damage to the tracks and the cars is extensive. Newly approved vaccines should help reduce the severity of a respiratory virus known as RSV this winter. More from Mark Moran.
Respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, is a leading cause of hospitalization for infants in the U.S. It is estimated to cause around 10,000 deaths annually in Americans aged 65 and older. Flu and COVID now have safe and effective vaccines, but until now, RSV did not. Dr. Patricia Winokur at the University of Iowa led a vaccine trial and found it helpful at both ends of the age spectrum, but also for pregnant women and their babies.
They did a study in about 7,000 pregnant women, and what they found is they could prevent disease in the babies for 90% of the time for 3 months. And then if you followed them for 6 months, they were about 80% protected.
This clinical trial was conducted among 37,000 adults aged 60 and older nationwide. I'm Mark Moran.
A warning for lead-foot drivers. The Wisconsin State Patrol is doing eye-in-the-sky speed enforcement operations in three parts of the state today and tomorrow. Today it's happening on Interstate 3990 in the Madison area and on I-94 near the border with Minnesota. Tomorrow it happens on I-94 in the Kenosha area. State troopers say it's easier to spot speeders from a plane. They say they're getting the word out ahead of time so drivers know to slow down and drive safely. And that's what Wisconsin needs to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
For Civic Media News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Here's what you need to know in Southeast Wisconsin. Timothy Heller, the man accused of making terrorist threats against Carroll University, is still in search of a new lawyer after his request to have a county-funded attorney was denied by a judge. Heller, who had been previously involuntarily committed for mental health treatment, is currently represented by attorney Paul Crawford and remains free on a $1,000 cash bond. The funding for Milwaukee's Republican National Convention has been significantly reduced from $10 million down to $1 million, with the governor reallocating the remaining $9 million to the state's tourism office. The governor's decision stems from the belief that lawmakers didn't sufficiently allocate funds for key priorities in the state. A substantial portion of the initial funding was originally designated to support Milwaukee in meeting the costs associated with hosting a national political convention. A fatal Shorewood shooting this morning is under investigation.
One victim was transported to a hospital for treatment, and one victim is deceased. The suspect has been located, and there's no longer any threat to the public.
Captain Fernando Santiago with Shorewood Police told WISN 12 that the shots were fired at around 4 this morning. We're working on learning more. Two workers at the West Dallas Fireworks Show were injured as a result of a firework misfire. That's according to West Dallas Police. The incident Tuesday night happened when a fireworks shell failed to ignite correctly, resulting in an explosion at the launch site and causing the workers to sustain injuries from shrapnel. An investigation is going on. Those workers are recovering. The final weekend of the world's largest music festival is underway. The final Summerfest weekend features American Cornhole League competitions and performances by artists like Young Gravy and Imagine Dragons. Folks going to Summerfest Saturday can get free admission from noon until 3. For Civic Media News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
And now, your Wisconsin weather from Civic Media.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot with a look at your weather ahead. Over the last couple of days, the state has received around 1 to 3 inches of rainfall, rising some river levels drastically to nearly the 50th to 90th percentile. Some severe storms smacked into the area last night, dumping heavy downpours with localized flash flooding too. But today, it's time to sit back and relax, with comfortable winds out of the northwest giving us drier air and much cooler temperatures. Highs will climb into the upper 60s to low 70s in the Northwoods, with the upper 70s to low 80s for the southern half of the state. Nothing but sunshine and a few clouds to complement the day, with no air quality issues either. Dare I say it's one of the best days so far this summer? So get outside and enjoy it. And be sure to open those windows up too. We stay mostly clear tonight, with lows dipping to the 50s and the 60s. Have a tremendous Thursday, Wisconsin. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot, Civic Media News.
The Brewers and the Cubs wrap up their series today. Good afternoon. I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Last night, the Brewers, who led most of the way, took a 3-1 lead into the top of the ninth with all-star closer Devin Williams on the mound and just one strike away from a victory. The Cubs' Nick Horner at bat on the Cubs' marquee TV network.
On the ground, Anderson picks it up. Dramatic fashion. 3 runs in the ninth.
Brewers third baseman Brian Anderson's throw to Owen Miller playing first went into the dirt.
No, I played the ball right. Just didn't make a good throw. That's a play that I've got to make, you know, 10 out of 10 times. I just didn't make that last one. Didn't put a good throw over there to O, and it cost us today.
It was the Brewers' Devin Williams' only second blown save in 20 appearances.
I mean, yeah, I did everything I can do. Stuff was fine. Command was fine. I was doing what I wanted to do. Blue pitch, start the inning, strike out the next guy, jam shot, whatever that was, to third. They hit one ball out of the infield that whole inning. So, yeah, I mean, I've been grinding, doing my best to stay ready every day, try and get it done for the boys.
Cubs manager David Ross on his designated hitter, Mike Tauchman's 2-run double to drive in the tying run and later score to put Chicago ahead.
That was a heck of a bat. The boys told me to cuss again in the postgame presser, but I'm going to stay away from it. So, heck of an at bat.
Brewers manager Craig Counsell on the ninth inning debacle in front of 31,000, a lot of them Cubs fans.
They, you know, found grass with two hits that were not well hit. And then, you know, Tauchman had a good at bat. I mean, you give him credit for having a nice at bat and fouling off some pitches and put a ball in play. And then we made a defensive mistake, and that was it.
So the Brewers lose 4-3. The Reds won again, beating the Nationals 9-2. So they have a 2-game lead over Milwaukee and the NL Central. The Cubs now have a 2-1 lead over the Crew, heading into today's fourth and final game of the series at AmFam Field. Chicago right-hander Marcus Stroman against the Brewers' Freddie Peralta, first pitch at 1:10. Then tomorrow night, it's the Brewers and the first-place Cincinnati Reds for a 3-game weekend series in Milwaukee before the All-Star break next week. The Brewers' Rowdy Tellez will not play. He's been placed on the 10-day IL with inflammation in his right arm. Tellez has been in a slump. His last home run was in May. NBA free agency today. Players can sign their new contracts. Robin Lopez is rejoining the Bucks after spending last season with the Cavaliers. The Bucks held a press conference before they head west for summer league games. New head coach Adrian Griffin asked to comment on ESPN's report that Giannis Antetokounmpo recently had knee surgery to clean out loose cartilage. Giannis missed 9 games last season due to soreness in his left knee.
Well, you know, yes, he had a routine surgery on his left knee, and it went great. Everything went as planned, and we expect him back ready to go in training camp.
That's the Bucks head coach Adrian Griffin. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Hi, this is Lindsay Kynard at 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK The Shaw. Here are upcoming events happening in the area.
On Wednesday the 28th, taking some musical selections during the light lunch on the Waukesha Riverwalk. Grab a bite to eat from the featured local food truck. Enjoy a meal at one of the downtown restaurants or bring a lunch. Enjoy the riverside. The event takes place from 11:30 AM to 1 PM. On Thursday, Summerfest resumes for the second weekend of 3. Gates open up at noon. General admission tickets start at $26. Summerfest.com for more details. Heartland's hometown celebration starts this Friday. It's full of fun for the entire family. Live music by headliners Stetson and Lace and Bella Kane, with opening acts beginning at Nixon Park at 4 p.m. on both Friday and Saturday. And Sunday, celebrate the 4th of July with the City of New Berlin at John Malone Park from 1 until 4:30 p.m. It's their 55th annual festival. Check out the details at newberlin.org.
If you have an event you'd like us to share, let me know. Email me, Lindsay Kiner, at info@civicmedia.com.
Hi, I'm Mandy Roberts, financial advisor with Thrivent. I'm here to help you assess your finances and find solutions to meet your needs. Let's ensure you have a strategy for success. To get started, call 715-470-1303. That's 715-470-1303.
Did you know your favorite shows and hosts are active on social media too? Find Civic Media on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook and be part of the conversation happening there. And go to our website, civicmedia.us, to learn more about the Civic Media Network.
Here's your updated forecast on The Shaw. A mix of clouds and sun this afternoon with a high of 76. Northwest winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Lows level off around 54 tonight, mainly clear. Highs around 77 tomorrow, mainly sunny. Chance for scattered thunderstorms Saturday, with highs in the upper 70s, partly cloudy skies Sunday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 75 degrees.
Continue the conversation online. Find and follow Civic Media on Facebook and on Twitter.
Welcome all. Thanks for joining us today. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio where you are the star, you are the talent, and you will drive the talking points of the day. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. I'm William Walter, Policy Research Director and Lead Training Organizer with Our Wisconsin Revolution, with Aaron on the board and special guest today, John Shelton. How are we doing today, gentlemen?
William, I'm doing great. Happy to be celebrating this 4th of July week, and our celebration of democracy and what makes us Americans. This is a great week.
Mm-hmm. Aaron, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well as well. Trying to figure out the dumpster fire that is Twitter and Threads and all that nonsense. And so we'll see how this all goes.
Yeah, save your mental health, Aaron, and don't worry. Twitter will be gone in like 6 months anyway.
Yeah, you're right.
Running it into the ground. but to give you a brief introduction, Professor Shelton is a friend of the show. We are launching our new segment, Office Hours, with Professor John Shelton today. The professor is in. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns you would like to share with the class, Professor Shelton will be here to answer. Give us a call, 844-967-2789. And John, could you give us a reintroduction to yourself? I know you are the professor. You are a professor at UW Green Bay and the chair of Democracy and Justice Studies, as well as the author of The Education Myth: How Human Capital Turned Social Democracy, How Human Capital Trumped Social Democracy. Excuse me. And you are the vice president of Higher Education for American Federation of Teachers Wisconsin. Give us a little more details on who Professor Shelton is.
Yeah, so I, by trade, I'm a historian. I study U.S. labor and working class history, history of American education, history of American politics. All those things are obviously pretty closely related to each other. But I really do think that being a professor means that you should be engaged in, some of the big debates of our time. So, I rep my local faculty and staff union as the president of UW Green Bay United. And then serve in the state federation level, as you just mentioned. So we have different constituencies in AFT Wisconsin, right? We're all educator unions, but my constituency is higher ed. So I've been elected to, this is my fourth term serving as vice president for higher education for AFT Wisconsin. Super proud of that and the work that I've been able to do with locals all across the state. And then involved in Green Bay politics too. So I was appointed to the first ever Green Bay Equal Rights Commission, which I'm really proud of, and we've done a lot of good work there. I could. There's other stuff I could talk about, but those are kind of the bullet point highlights.
Putting your time and effort where your mouth is. That's what I like to see. Actions speak louder than words. And we have had John on in the past to discuss the education myth, and I think that, particularly with what's going on in the state of Wisconsin right now with the budget and the funding cuts to the UW system, as well as at the national level with student loan debts, which we will touch on throughout the course of the show, this idea is really coming to the forefront right now, how important it is to focus on our youth, how important it is to kind of protect them from the predatory system that we see around us. So that'll be my first question for you, John. Obviously, we saw the Supreme Court last week, as we discussed, in a 6-3 decision rejecting Biden's proposal to cut student loan debt for millions of American students. This is going to have wide-ranging implications across not just the day-to-day life of millions of Americans, but I think the economy as a whole, when you're taking $200, $300, $400, $500, $600 a month and expecting people that had that as spending money. Basically, they had the ability to go out and use this money in their local communities and really help the local economy. Instead, it's going to be shoved down the throats of predatory lenders. This is going to have a monumental impact on students across the country. What are you seeing with your students in particular that that might really come to the forefront in the coming months and years?
Yeah, well, one thing I just want to correct you on quickly, William, is that the way that the student loan system works is it's actually the government, that the Department of Education, that loans us the money, right? So the government turns a profit actually from student loans. Used to be predatory banks, but that changed under the Obama administration. That was one thing that the Obama administration did, was to push the Department of Education to take on at least public loans, right? If you're taking out loans from a private lender, yeah, you might be dealing with some predatory lenders. But you know, the student loan thing, right? I think for a lot of young people, and this would have been transformative for a lot of people, right? $10,000 forgiveness for most borrowers, and $20,000 if for anybody who received Pell grants, right? And so the way mm-hmm. Pell grants work is they're based on income. So these would have been people who had fewer financial resources going into college, who would have ostensibly have probably more debt now, right? So this would be a transformative thing. You know, and so I think a lot of younger people right now are feeling like, you know, they had this real opportunity held in front of them and then kind of taken away. And I know for a lot of younger folks, the younger generations in this country, especially folks, you know, in that sort of decade coming out of college, many of them, it just feels like you don't really have anybody on your side, you know, when the government is taking these things away. And I think it really fits into how a lot of younger people were feeling about the Dobbs decision last year, right? That took away reproductive rights from all women, of course, but I think younger women really felt that pretty intensely. And so, you know, you saw this manifest at the ballot box in our state Supreme Court race. So this is, I think, another thing that young people are hearing, that, like, you know, we have a federal government, in this case, a conservative Supreme Court, that's sort of out of touch with what it is that young people need. But if I could say one other thing about this, I'm a little frustrated with the Biden administration as far as this goes, because, you know, I think it was a good idea to eliminate the amount of debt that they did. And they might still be able to do it down the road, actually, because the law was struck down, or the court decision struck down the efforts to eliminate the debt based on the sort of emergency powers, you know, of the crisis of the pandemic. And so
said Biden administration overstepped their authority.
Exactly. So it's possible the Biden administration could make the argument later that, like, we're going to do this, but do it under the Higher Education Act and our authority as effectively the person administering these loans more broadly. But the thing that frustrated me about this is that, you know, if you're going to eliminate some of the loans, why not eliminate everybody's loans, right? Like, to me, this is where the Democratic Party ends up sometimes, not all Democrats, of course, but in this particular instance, engaging in these half measures that they think are going to placate people, but they still got all of the criticism from the right and the law still got struck down, right? So it's like, if you're going to try to do something to help working people in this country, go big, right? Go big and you know, make it a universal program. That's what I'd like to see. And then the other thing that this speaks to, too, is this wedge, and I get into this in the book, right, that you noted, this wedge, this false dichotomy that has been forced on us, that you know, only people with college degrees are going to get certain things and people without aren't going to get them. You know, the eliminating student loan debt should be in the context of ensuring that everybody has economic security, whether they have a college degree or not. So if you wanted to create a package of legislation that would, you know, eliminate everybody's student loan debt forever, let's make higher education free, but let's also combine that with a jobs guarantee and labor rights, so that whether you have a college degree or not, you know you're going to have a good job. And that will help stem the resentment that clearly was kind of drummed up in part of this, especially the way the right talked about this, right? That college graduates were getting something that everybody else wasn't getting.
Mm-hmm. And no half measures is exactly, that's the perfect way to phrase it, because that's exactly what I was going to say when you noted that Democrats they're trying to kind of play both sides, in the sense that they're helping their base because we're giving you student loan relief, but we're not going to eradicate all of it because that's not fair and all that kind of stuff. When in reality, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that $10,000 or $20,000 isn't incredibly helpful for people who are swimming in mountains and mountains of debts. But in the grand scheme of things, you know, most college students have significantly higher debt than that. And if you're getting rid of some of the problem, why not just tackle the entire issue? Why not hit at the root of the issue itself? Something else that I'd like to touch on that you just brought up, and we talked about it a little bit before the show, is how all of these issues are kind of intertwined, particularly in regards to the budget. When we just saw that the budget cut $32 million for the UW system. And I think that, as you noted, this is going to force the universities to increase tuition across the board, which means that you're going to have to take out larger student loans to be able to pay for the education that my generation grew up being told you are going to need if you want to be successful, as we touched on in the past. I don't understand how a lot of elected officials can complain about the cost of higher education and then turn around and make a decision like this, which will only lead to even higher increases in the cost of education.
Well, we're not going to be able to cover this all before the break, but I'll get started with it. Okay. So the first thing that you have to recognize is that Republicans in the legislature have an ideological reason to try and defund the UW system. Okay. It's not that they don't want to have other kinds, students to have access to higher education, but they believe that what's happening in our classrooms is that we are supposedly indoctrinating students, right? In things that, in topics that they don't actually want to learn about and that are threatening to Republicans who want to retain the kind of hierarchies that exist in this state, right? So when you looked at some of the things that the Assembly Speaker Robin Voss was saying about the UW system, when he, he's not on the Joint Finance Committee, but he was kind of obviously like overseeing the effort of the JFC to put this $32 million cut to the UW system in the budget and to push for the elimination of hundreds of positions that are connected to diversity, equity, and inclusion, right? Which all DEI is helping to think, it's helping students to think about how race, gender, sex, sexuality, and class impact our society, right? And impact students' ability to be successful. I mean, actually, like veteran services falls within the orbit of DEI. So,
Every Fortune 500 company has their own DEI statements. They teach trainings on it. Like, they recognize the importance of this in modern society.
Right. Even that sort of like really thin, like neoliberal version that you get from these Fortune 500 companies, for sure. But Voss and the Republicans don't want that. Voss actually said, "I'm embarrassed to be a UW graduate." And now this is funny because he's a graduate of UW-Whitewater in political science and public relations, I think. And you think about how he's using what he's learned to actually carry out these sorts of things, right? My colleague Neil Krause and I wrote an op-ed about this in the Cap Times. People can check out. So he's got this like bizarre animus, and it's extended to a lot of the Republicans, and of course it's caught up in things that are happening nationally, where what they actually want. They accuse us of indoctrination, but actually that's what they want to do. They want to create this very narrow paradigm around which students can learn things. And that's what they want our universities to do. And so they're basically saying like, no, we're going to punish you unless you stop teaching this giving students access to this like really broad education, where they learn about race and gender and all these things that we know are important and that students really want to learn about.
It's projection all the way down, John. Good point. We're talking with Professor John Shelton today. This is Office Hours on Town Call. If you have a question for the professor, give us a call, 844-967-2789. We'll see you right after the break.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News on 540 AM WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Former President Trump's personal aide has pleaded not guilty at court in Miami to charges of scheming with Mr. Trump to hide classified documents at Mar-a-Lago. Correspondent Scott McFarlane.
This was the third attempt to arraign Walt Nauta, the co-defendant in the first ever federal criminal prosecution of a former president. During the first two hearings, Nauta didn't have a local attorney to help represent him. Today, he did.
Climate scientists like Jonathan Foley are weighing in on this hottest week on Earth on record.
This is yet another signal to us that we need to take climate change seriously. This is beginning to get more and more frequent.
Mark Zuckerberg says his brand new Twitter rival has already surpassed 30 million signups. CBS's Danya Backus.
It's called Threads and is billed as a text-based conversation app. Instagram users can link their current account to the new app and follow the same people.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
For Civic Media News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Here's what you need to know in Southeast Wisconsin. The funding for Milwaukee's Republican National Convention has been significantly reduced from $10 million down to $1 million, with the governor reallocating the remaining $9 million to the state's tourism office. The governor's decision stems from the belief that lawmakers didn't sufficiently allocate funds for key priorities in the state. A substantial portion of the initial funding was originally designated to support Milwaukee in meeting the costs associated with hosting a national political convention. Investigating the cause of the train derailment in Dodge County is expected to be a time-consuming process. No injuries were reported in the incident, and none of the 29 train cars were carrying any hazardous materials. The derailment resulted in extensive track damage and left behind a significant mess to clean up. For Civic Media News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Living happily ever after isn't always a reality. If you're over 50 and are considering divorce, attorney Andrea Gage with the Everson Law Firm can provide the guidance you need. Andrea focuses on silver divorces, the kind that get more complicated over time and present unique challenges. A family, multiple properties, significant assets. Andrea and the team at Everson Law have the experience to protect your interests. Call Everson Law to set up an appointment with Andrea today. It's never too late to be happy. Everson Law, 920-435-3734.
Hi, I'm Mandy Roberts, financial advisor with Thrivent. I'm here to help you assess your finances and find solutions to meet your needs. Let's ensure you have a strategy for success. To get started, call 715-470-1303. That's 715-470-1303.
With one call, the Civic Media Network of stations can deliver your business's message to the entire state of Wisconsin.
Or your hometown.
Marketing plans that work for your business. One call can do it all. Civic Media, 608-819-8255. If you're searching for top-notch electrical service for your commercial or industrial property, connect with Current Electric in Wauwatosa. Current Electric offers a wide array of electrical services to clients in Milwaukee and the surrounding areas. Celebrating 40 years of energizing and illuminating lives in southeastern Wisconsin. Their dedicated team of superheroes can help with everything from parking lot lighting upgrades to office and business LED conversions, EV chargers to service upgrades. Call 262-295-2815 or log on to callcurrent.com.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. Today we are holding office hours with Professor John Shelton. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns you'd like to share with the class, please reach out. Professor Shelton is here to answer them. And John, before the break, we were talking about kind of how a lot of these issues intertwine, particularly in regards to the budget, the cutting of funding to the UW system and student loans. And something that I'd like to hear from you then is, what would you advise as the best course of action that Governor Tony Evers should have taken in regards to the funding cuts at the budget level?
Yeah, so I think everybody I hear from in the UW system is pretty frustrated right now because, you know, I'll just I'll go out on a limb and say almost all of us supported Governor Evers in both of his election campaigns, and you know, especially in his re-election campaign. You know, it's a pretty resounding win, right? Last year,
91,000 votes. That's a Wisconsin landslide.
And I think a lot of us feel like, okay, we're winning these statewide elections. What people are actually voting for is a fully funded education system, whether that's K-12 or UW. And so it means like, you don't compromise on things like vouchers, which Evers of course did in the negotiations over Milwaukee, and revenue for Milwaukee, because we're winning these elections and public education is something that we should all be protecting and actually making a deeper commitment to. So I think people were frustrated by that, but then in terms of the UW system, I mean, we're getting a cut here. And we've had over a decade of austerity in this state, and combined with a tuition freeze until very recently, means that students just aren't able to get all of the things that they need, right? I mean, they can't get all the support services. You know, we have fewer faculty now in the UW system than we did like 15 years ago. We have more students, what we need is actually an infusion of funds to fully fund the UW system and make sure students have what they need. What we're getting is continued austerity here over this pretext about DEI. And, what this means is that students are going to have to continue to do with less, or the UW system is going to have to raise tuition. The Board of Regents just raised tuition 5%. That's barely keeping up with the inflation we've had over the past few years. So students could be looking at more tuition increases, right? So you think about how that connects to something like student loan debt, and they're also hearing from the federal government, no, we're not going to do anything for you. That looks pretty bleak. And, I think you're starting to hear this from a lot of young people. And, what I heard from a lot of people in terms of this entire budget is that there's really not very much in there that warranted Evers signing the budget. I mean, it's great that he used the line item veto to get rid of the proposal to eliminate all the DEI positions. I mean, that's of course something that he should have done, and I'm glad that he did that. But I think he should have vetoed the budget in its entirety and gone to the Republicans and said, come back with something that actually funds education in this country, because in our state, because this is something that's too valuable, and we've let it go underfunded for too long, both at the K-12 and the higher education level. And, we're going to do something about that. And if you're not going to come back, then we're just going to continue with the funding that we've had for the past couple of years, because there's so many things that are underfunded. Childcare providers are going to go out of business because the Republicans refuse to extend the funding that is necessary for a lot of childcare providers to keep going. So you add it all up and it's like, again, we're winning these elections. When people voted to elect Evers last year, what they were saying is, these are the values we want you to fight for. And to me, it seems like this is settling for far less than we need to settle for,
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point, John. And actually, to our listeners, if you didn't get a chance to listen to yesterday's episode, we had Colin McNamara on. He's 23 years old, running for state Senate in Senate District 24. And we basically had that exact conversation, John. And young people are losing interest in the system. They're becoming apathetic because they're not seeing results. Though a lot of them do still care, how do we drive this engagement? How do we kind of reinvigorate their love and passion for their communities? John, I see a lot of hands in the audience, so we're going to get some questions from the class. First, we have Mark from Prairie du Sac. Mark, what's your question for the professor today?
Well, what I'd like to know is, why is it that me, just a provincial boy from northern Wisconsin, getting an accounting degree, and I'm 65 years old and studied a little bit more of like the founding principles of our government in the Federalist Papers and such, know that like Josh Hawley is full of crap when he says, oh, this country is founded on Christianity and Judaism and that is just absolute nonsense. If that is the case, then why can't we do the president just declare a day of jubilee and cancel all debt, whatever kind of debt it is, that's in the biblical canon. But I mean that part of government in Wisconsin Constitution as well as the federal constitution is to promote the general welfare. And I think that's what the governor and people opposing the current version of the Republican Party is that apparently the Republican Party does not give a rat's ass about promoting the general welfare anymore. I mean that it's of interest to note that in the Confederate Constitution, the general welfare is not mentioned as part of one of their founding principles in the Confederate Constitution. nor is the common defense in the Confederate Constitution. So,
Mark, what is your question for the professor?
How do we engage people and convince them in these red districts that they're doing themselves a disservice by voting for these fools that are taken away from them and convincing these people you don't deserve any more, you know, that as long as we have more people to get less, that it's hard for me to wrap my mind around where these Republicans are coming from these days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thoughts, Professor?
Yeah, Mark, thanks for the call. I mean, you make so many interesting points. There's like so many things I could talk about, but I did want to just talk about one thing quickly, which was, you know, this argument of Josh Hawley and these other, you know, folks that our nation was founded on Christian principles. Absolutely untrue, right? I mean, one of the look at the First Amendment, of course, but, you know, one of the sort of major interventions of the American Revolution was this push from Thomas Jefferson and others. Good week to be talking about Thomas Jefferson, right? With all the contradictions, slave owner, et cetera. But, you know, one of the big innovations of the American Revolution was the separation of church and state. We are not a nation founded on Christian principles. We are a nation founded on the idea of Republican democracy, and that, you know, people have the right to practice religion. They have the right to conscience. They have the right to free thought. But you can't impose religious belief on anybody. And that's one of the bedrock foundations of our nation. And that is very much worth celebrating this week. So I'm glad you brought that up. Now, in terms of what we do to get folks in this country, you know, to think about, you know, their own interests and get excited about not vote against, you know, frankly, too many Republicans that really aren't fighting for the economic security of the people in their own districts. You know, I think we're in a existential fight right now to determine what the principles of American democracy are. And for too long, those of us on the left, I don't mean us in this conversation, but I mean the center left, Democrats, largely at the national level, have pushed for a view of economics that it's neoliberal, right? It says we're going to open things up to the marketplace and individual initiative, and that's going to solve all of our problems. That's been an utter disaster. And one of the things that's happened is that Republican populists who actually have no ideas to improve the lives of most working Americans. Think about Trump, right? He was going to just like berate corporate leaders and get them to bring jobs back to the United States. That doesn't work, right? The only thing that works is by ensuring that the government, which, as you mentioned, right, should be there to promote the general welfare, that's right in the Constitution, to ensure that the government of we the people is actually doing things to make we the people our lives better, and not corporations make it more easy for them to exploit us. So that's the existential argument we're having, and we need to make, this is going to sound kind of ironic, but we actually don't need to criticize Republicans to get those folks that you're talking about to not vote for them. What we need to do is come up with a better argument on our side. How is it that we are going to ensure economic security for every person who works in this country? That's how we build the foundation of a stable democracy. That's how we get people voting against the Republicans who are actively trying to undermine our democracy. That's how it has to happen, in my opinion.
I think you need to show them wins too. It's really easy to give you an example. I have a friend of mine who I work with very closely. She's an incredible human being, but we were having a conversation about her time growing up. Now she's significantly older than I am. Women couldn't have credit cards when she was a girl, right? And the Democratic Party fought for and got her rights that she did not have available to her. And because of that, they earned her vote, essentially, is what she was saying. And my counter to that was, that's excellent, and I'm glad, and that makes perfect sense. But I was not alive at that time. That did not impact my life. That did not earn my vote. I hate to make this comparison, but you know how they say in sports all the time, it's a what have you done for me lately type league. That, I think, could be applied to politics as well, in the sense that you can't rest on your laurels. You need to be continuing to improve the lives of your constituents. That is your role as an elected official is to represent the people who chose to elect you. And if you are not continuing to push for them cycle after cycle after cycle, then you cannot expect them to come out and support you cycle after cycle after cycle.
That's 100% right. And you look at the sort of high watermark, in my view, of the Democratic Party in this country, starts in the 1930s with FDR. Election of 1936, which happens after 1935, when you get the Social Security Act, the National Labor Relations Act, which ensures workers' rights to unionize, the Revenue Act, which really kind of initiates a robust system of progressive taxation. All of those things, they're very popular because they literally transformed people's lives. 1936, that's the moment when working people start to vote for a generation for the Democratic Party, because people see them as the party that's actually fighting for working people. And, you know, there's a reason that Democrats dominate national politics from then until about the 1970s, right? It's when Democrats move away from those principles under Carter and others that come after that you start to see Republicans make a lot of headway. This is a country in which people are basically, Democrats, small D Democrats, right, who believe that government should play an active role in making their lives better. That's long been the belief. And it's only when we've moved away from that in our politics that we have these really, really divisive and nasty politics and, you know, reactionary Republicans trying to take away our rights.
Mm-hmm. And so we got a couple more hands in the audience. I'm going to go to Karina from Milwaukee. Karina, what is your question for the professor?
My question is, gentlemen. My question is, as far as I understand, and I looked at the student loan forgiveness, it's not the only president who can do that. It's also a minister, the education department. Why wouldn't they get together and give the education department enough a budget to just remove the loans? Because it's hard to take in that military budget is untouchable, and health care budget and education budget is getting wasted practically to nothing. How does it make sense? And when I talk about it with American people, it feels like when they talk about the country, yes, it's their country. They were born here. I wasn't. It's my country today, and I'm a citizen of it. But unfortunately, there's no backing for the people who live here because they don't belong to this land. This is not their motherland. This is that, so now we can just waste people for
Karina, I think everybody who comes to America, this is a melting pot. This is our land. And we do have the commercial break coming up shortly, but Professor Shelton is going to get to your question right after the break. Don't let anybody tell you that this is not your land. This is all of our land. John, so did you get the question, John?
Oh, yeah, I did. Sorry, I thought we were waiting for the break.
We are. I just want to make sure that we're on the same page. So, yeah. And we're going to have a couple more questions for Professor Shelton after the break. If you have any questions, calls, or concerns for the professor, come on down to office hours. Give us a call, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back after the break.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup.
Yes, that's awesome.
Starting at 6 AM, Up North News, 8 to 10, The Earl Ingram Show. Mondays, 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crute. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show on 540 AM WAUK.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I have Corrine Hendrickson, part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed group.
We spend $500 on our infants and toddlers on average. If you go to the other countries, you're talking about $11,000 on average in Europe and the other developed countries. It makes a difference. They end up spending less on their K-12 system. They end up spending less on their colleges. They end up spending less on jail.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Weekday morning, 6 till 8.
On your local civic media radio station and on the app.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done?
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times this afternoon, with daytime highs approaching 76. Northwesterly winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Lows level off around 54 tonight, mainly clear. Mainly clear again tomorrow, 77. Upper 70s Saturday, with a chance for scattered storms, low 80s Sunday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 75 degrees.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Cruz on 540 AM WAUK.
This land is your land, and this land is my land. From the California to the New York
Island. Welcome, one, welcome all. Welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. Today we are hosting Office Hours with Professor John Shelton. And John, we're going to go to a bit of a lightning round. We had Karina's question from right before the break, if you want to touch on that quickly.
Yeah, I just want to say quickly that, the Biden administration could actually revisit this under the Higher Education Act. It's a little unclear because, the Department of Education has only kind of absolved loans when there are efforts of like malfeasance, right? When there were like predatory lenders and they've completely forgiven loans. So this is something that they could revisit. But I just want to remind folks of something really quick, which is this. We have a Supreme Court that's 66%, two-thirds Republican appointees. Republicans have only won one popular vote election since 1988. I just want people to remember that, okay?
And that was in 04 with an incumbent conservative president.
So think about how out of whack the Supreme Court is with what it is that most Americans want.
Mm-hmm. And so we're going to go back to the phone lines. We have Andrea from Menominee Falls. Andrea, what's your question for the professor today?
Hi, thanks for having me. So my question is just a little bit of a pivot, but just thinking about solutions going forward, and I always go back to finding some way to dissolve this us versus them mentality between conservatives and liberals. What are your thoughts on that?
So that's a great question. I think we have to be really clear about what's happening in this country. And I don't actually think most conservative voters want the things that like Republican politicians, at least in Wisconsin, are pushing on them, right? I think those people are Republicans, people like Robin Voss, are using legitimate grievances that people feel with this political system to push them toward things that most Americans don't actually want. If you look at polls, most Americans want things like universal health care. I think almost the majority of Republicans support voters, by the way, support labor unions, right? But how come these things aren't being manifest in policy, right? It's because politicians are not actually, as something William was talking about earlier, faithfully advocating for the things that their constituents want. Instead, and it's particularly the case with Republican office holders, they're using these dog whistles to try and divide us. So I completely agree with you. We need political representatives that actually support the things that the people of this state and this country want.
It's culture war division, top to bottom. Obviously, I'm in the Wild Counties. I speak with a lot of conservative voters, and we do agree on the vast majority of issues. They, in an ironic twist of fate, they vote by harm reduction in a similar way that I vote by harm reduction. You know, you're voting against whoever you hate more. Let's say you're voting for the lesser evil cycle after cycle after cycle.
Yeah, I agree.
Andrea, did you have another question?
Oh, no, that was great. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining us, Andrea. Let's go back to the phone lines. We got Kurt from Rhinelander. Kurt, what is your question for the professor today?
Yeah, professor, gentlemen, I got a question on the tax breaks. Is that just for the lower 30,000?
That's correct, Kurt. So the initial Republican proposal would have had for the budget would have had tax breaks or tax cuts for all four of the income tax brackets, and they would have actually merged four brackets into three, and so making them less progressive. I think at one point, Republicans were even floating the idea of a flat tax, which, as we know, really, really hurts working people, because what that means is that the people who can afford to pay more, like millionaires and billionaires, aren't paying as much for all the public services that we all need and that they all profit from. So what Evers did is he used his line item power. I'm sure what he would have probably wanted to do was to extend some more tax relief to middle class people. But, you know, he was kind of presented with a choice where he would have had to have probably deprived the state of a lot of revenue and give significant tax increases to people making a relatively large amount of money. So he line itemed vetoed the two tax breaks for the top brackets. So you're correct. The tax breaks, which were pretty modest, actually, will only apply to people making less than, as you noted, $35,000 a year or something like that. Yep. But this was really important. It was really important, I think, to veto, especially that top tax cut, because you're going to have like something like 10 or 20 millionaires each get $1.8 million in tax cuts, tax expenditure that we were going to pay for just forever, right? And so that would have been bad for, you know, the politics of our state, but certainly for the things that our state would need to fund moving forward.
Yeah, I was looking at, I'm seeing to be the tax percentage. Under $30,000, you pay practically nothing in income tax. And up to $100,000, it's close to $1,000 a yearly income tax. $200,000 is $3,500. $500,000, you're paying almost $70,000. You make $1 million, you're paying close to almost $110,000. So, how does this benefit any middle class by no tax cut? We got a $6 billion surplus instead of giving the middle class at least $1,000 in a tax break. Now they get absolutely nothing. Then here we're talking about school tuition. I mean, it makes absolutely no sense, because he's just bitter. The rich pay the highest percentage taxes the way they are. That's why when people retire in a state, they leave. And see, I just don't understand what the logic behind it is. That's why nobody stays in a state. They don't stay and retire if they move, because they don't want to pay the state income tax. And it was only going to drop it down by a minute percentage. Know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. The thing is, in terms of that third bracket, you make an interesting point that maybe that could have been something that Evers considered a bit more. I think in terms of the top bracket, people aren't leaving the state when they're making over $1 million a year, right? Because of the slightly higher marginal tax increase. What I do agree with you is that we should do something to make it more likely for retirees to stay in this state, right? I do agree with you there, and I do think that's something that our legislators should probably be considering. I'm not an expert on that. But, you know, in terms of giving relief to middle-class people, I think there's other things that could have been done in this budget, like providing free school meals for, you know, all working parents, by, you know, doing something about childcare in this state, by making it more likely that workers could have a strong union. All those things would probably do a lot more than a tax cut. I'm not disagreeing with you necessarily, but I think there were a lot of ways this budget was lacking.
To give you some of the numbers as well, John, there were 11 filers in the state of Wisconsin with $75 million or more adjusted gross income. They would have received an average decrease of $1.8 million in tax reduction. The current tax rate is 7.65% for those individuals. It would have been cut to 6.5%. So to answer your question, Kurt, the ultra wealthy were getting the largest percentage of a tax cut as well. But because of the progressive tax code, you are getting that tax cut through every bracket. So technically, they're getting four tax cuts rather than an individual in the third bracket who's only getting 3, 2, 1, whatever, for example. Thank you so much for joining us today, Professor Shelton. This has been Office Hours with John Shelton. The professor will be in again. I can't give you an exact time or date for that, but if you have questions, comments, or concerns for the class, please feel free to share. Give us a call, 844-967-2789. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.
Thanks, William.
This land was made for you and me.
Attention, Wisconsin veterans.
Hello, I'm Tony Evers, the governor of Wisconsin. If you are a veteran struggling to pay for rent, utilities, or other life-sustaining services, I want you to know that the Veterans Rental Assistance Program is here to help. You have already made a most noble sacrifice. You shouldn't have to continue doing so. We are here to support you. The Veterans Rental Assistance Program was created by and for people living in Wisconsin, with benefit approvals being issued to veterans in just days, not months. It's never easy to ask for assistance, but rest assured, we're here to help. You've always been there for us. We want you to know that we're here for you. Call 833-WISBRAP. That's 833-947-8727. Or visit VRAPWI.com. On behalf of the state of Wisconsin, thank you.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.